Now on Racing Pulse, RSN's racing editor, Matt Stewart.
Pakenham's a terrific jumps track. He said you probably have to put in a few more steeplechase fences along the back and down the side, but he said Pakenham's as good as it gets for quality, safe, classy jumpers coming through.
For more news, opinion and selections, head to rsn.net.au.
It's good to have Maddie Stewart back for the news. Thank you for filling in yesterday, Maddie, while I went through one of the worst things you can possibly do in your life, moving house. So good to have you back, mate. There's plenty of news around.
I was living in Elwood. Actually, funny enough, I went for a walk through Elwood with one of the kids yesterday, Beach Avenue, about 25 years ago, and I decided to hire my own van and do my own removalist.
Oh, no.
Didn't take out the insurance, stacked into the back. This is a true story. There was one thing that occurred that I can't repeat on air, but I stacked into the back of a truck and didn't have the insurance and deposited it back and had to pay them $3,500. And it would have cost me $250 to remove my 8 items from one unit to the next.
I was going to say it was probably worth more than what you were moving.
Exactly. It was a regrettable day. So I feel for you. Yeah. I feel for you.
Yes. Anyway, we've got through the worst. And hopefully that might be the same for Debbie Weymouth. Have you got an update on Debbie? How is she?
Yeah, I spoke to Beck, her daughter, today, and there are promising signs overnight. Beck's been in constant contact with the ICU nurses at the Alfred, and she's been brought out of the induced coma. She's been communicative with the medical people there at the Alfred. She looks like she's going to have some plates inserted in her jaw, maybe on Friday. And she looks like she's going to be weaned off the breathing apparatus that she's been on through the induced coma. So long way to go. They did discover a slight fracture in her back, but they're trying to work out whether it was a pre-existing fracture, an old fracture, or whether it was caused by the fall. And then when they work out that, they'll work out what to do. But obviously multiple cracked ribs, jaw, and obviously the trauma from the fall itself. So, a really worrying time for... I'm trying to work out how to describe Debbie Weymouth. You've got the great female participants like the Jamie Carrs and so on. There's no direct comparison there through CV and prize money and public image and all that sort of stuff, but she, Debbie Weymouth represents 40 years, four decades of the history of racing in this state. When she first started out in the 70s, she was riding in ladies' bracelets, which they used to call the lipstick races. That was a different world back then. And then came through the ladies' bracelet era to be a perennial star of the picnic circuit. And I think her first day when things opened up beyond the ladies' bracelet days was in 1989 at Balnarring, and she rode three winners, including the Cup. So she's kind of a hero in the smaller circuit of racing, but because of the legend of what she's been able to achieve, there aren't many people out there in Victoria who don't know who Debbie Weymouth is.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, she should be a potential Hall of Famer when we speak of racing.
Yep.
And the longevity and breaking the glass ceiling. I think she's mid to late 60s. And the fact that she was still riding and the family heritage in racing as well, it's just incredible, really.
So I might have got this wrong. I was just thinking, trying to think out loud. Daughter of David, legendary jumps jockey, sister of Butch, four-time Grand Annual winner, wife of Robert Weymouth, who is the son of Charlie, the legendary trainer of Rancher, and I think she's the mother of Beck and the grandmother, I think, of Rowan. So, both sides of the pedigree, quite extraordinary. So, no surprise that she started riding track work at St. Arnold at the age of 13. So, total legend.
Well, everyone's got their fingers crossed, and the thoughts are with the entire Weymouth family. And I know everyone within the racing industry, you couldn't have a more loved character than Debbie Weymouth. So we'll continue to follow her progress as well. Maddie, you've had a good in-depth chat with Tommy Berry this morning, and we're going to play a decent chunk of this because it's always great when we get to hear Tommy Berry, but especially talking about a horse I know you have a great love affair with, and you'll be lining the fences down at Living Legends to welcome in Pakistan Star. Let's have a listen to the interview and then we'll have a chat about it after. This is Maddie with Tommy a little earlier this morning.
Pakistan Star given a taste of the persuader with 100 to go, and he's burst away from Exultant, trying to stick on, then Eagle Way, but Pakistan Star, he is the shining light of Hong Kong racing, and he takes a second group one.
Well, there it was, one ride, one win, Tommy Berry aboard the enigmatic Pakistan Star, and that was in the Standard Chartered Shader Cup back in 2018 at Sha Tin. Tommy joins us to reflect on the freak or the enigma, or what do we call him? How are you, Tommy?
Hey, guys. How are you?
Yeah. What's the first thing that pops into your mind when you think of Pakistan Star?
Oh, just quirky. Brilliant. Yeah, he was an amazing racehorse on his day, that's for sure.
Tell us about that win that we just replayed, the Chartered Shader Cup back in 18.
Yeah, it was probably one of the easiest wins I've had anything to do with on a horse, especially at Group 1 Company. He'd won the QE2 leading into that. I got approached to ride him because I was riding Chautauqua at the time and had a few issues with Chautauqua around the same time. And Tony Cruz said, you seem to get along with horses that are a little bit quirky, so can you have a go on him? And I'd already taken a ride on a Japanese horse in the QE2, so I think William Buick rode him in that. He came out and was impressive, and I got back on him for the Champions of Chatter Cup, and obviously he was the standout horse in the race, and it was pretty painless to watch.
So your experience on one quirky animal helped you get on another?
Yeah, he did. So that was the reason why the connections and Tony asked me to ride him. I was actually wasn't going very well at the time in Hong Kong. I was having a bit of a lean run. So you know what it's like over there with luck and stuff like that. So Pakistan Star, having the ride on him and winning that Group 1 actually turned things around for me a little bit over there. So he was an incredible horse. And obviously I enjoyed watching him from back here in Australia, and so to get over there and be able to win a Group 1 on him was, it'll go down as one of, you know, my favourite wins of my career.
How was he received in Hong Kong as his career unfolded?
Yeah, no, they still loved him, you know, because horses like him catch people's imagination, you know. They, you know, it wouldn't have mattered if he was favourite in a race or if he was the outside of the field. Everyone had their eyes on him, and they never took their eyes off him the whole race. And what he was able to do in some races was quite freakish, and he was, I haven't ridden too many horses that had as much natural ability as him. He was beating Group 1 fields there at one stage, even in the QE2 with Content, and doing it comfortably. And I remember riding him in a trial one day, and he was in a trial full of Group 1 winners, and he led the trial up, went to pull up at the top of the straight, dropped out to about second last, and then got going again and almost won the trial, and that was all within 300 metres. So it shows you how good his turn of foot was on his day. It's funny, it's like a love-hate relationship. You love him 1 minute, and then you're filthy with him the next. But at the end of the day, he was able to give the family some of their biggest moments in racing.
Did his, and bit with same as Chautauqua, did his race manners reflect in his personality? Were they similar horses personality-wise?
Yeah, they were. They were very much loners. They liked to be left alone, and I guess, you know, even Pakistan Star in a lot of his races used to race out the back, very much like Chautauqua, and they didn't want to be asked to be pushed around or slapped or stood over. And I think that's why I got along with Pakistan Star so well as well, very much like Chautauqua. In his races, I never asked him to be any closer in the run than he wanted to be. I just left him alone and let him do his thing, and he seemed to enjoy that.
Do you think he'd be well received at Living Legends?
Yeah, definitely. He's a beautiful horse, great natured. It's funny, the first time I ever saw him in his box, I didn't know it was him because he'd always had the earmuffs and the blinkers on, whether it was track work, race day, or trials. And I didn't even know he'd had white markings on his face. I just thought he was completely, you know, dark brown. But no, he'll definitely be very well received there. He's a kind natured horse, and I'm sure he'll have a lovely retirement there.
I reckon he will be an enormous attraction at Living Legends, Michael. He's young and he's quirky. It's almost like a circus-type attraction. So it'd be interesting to see how they brand him out there at Living Legends.
Well, I know he was your favourite horse, the Enigma Pakistan Star. And it's ironic, isn't it, the connection that Tommy Berry has had with a couple of those horses, like Chautauqua as well, and now he's on Masked Crusader. So they are quirky individuals, and it just shows that they've all got their characters, haven't they? Personalities.
Yeah, and I think it got edited out of the grab when he was talking about the the how they both like to be, they were both loners. Chautauqua and Pakistan Star very much like to keep their own company. And he said in the mounting yard, he said he was giraffe-like. He had an unusual body shape, sway back and all sorts of things. And funny how he also said he because he'd always appeared on race day with the heavy headgear and the rat ears and all the rabbit ears and so on, he didn't even know he had a blaze until they took his mask off one day. So, yeah, I'm glad Tommy felt so affectionate about Pakistan Star. And I to be honest, I should have, but I haven't. I haven't been to Living Legends yet. I know you have. And
haven't you?
No, and I think my...
Your boys would love it.
I think my maiden voyage can tie in with Pakistan Star.
Yeah, they do a huge job down there. And we might even organise when he arrives, we'll do a little OB down there. We might take the show to Living Legends and do a little welcome party for Pakistan Star, but all the other legends down there. And they do basically survive on donations. So... and sponsorship. So once again, a timely reminder, anyone who can back a winner, they do such a great thing for racing down there at Living Legends. No, if you can throw anything their way, do so. Hey, speaking of Hong Kong racing, what's going on with Casper Founds?
Interesting. He's not anti-vax, but he has claimed, he's their reigning champion trainer, he's claimed, this has been going on for a couple of weeks, that he there's a medical issue that has made him... unable to have the vaccination. He says he's pro-vaccination, but unable to be vaccinated. And because of the Hong Kong situation with vaccination, which is mirrors ours, the champion trainer's been unable to attend the races for the last fortnight because he's strictly not allowed on course. He's able to attend track work in his stable office, but the race day experience has been denied Casper Founds. It's just interesting off the back of Novak Djokovic, isn't it, really, that everywhere in the world there are examples of, you know, of those who are willingly unvaccinated or can't be vaccinated and what impact it's having on their lives.
That's a difficult one if Casper has a fair dinkum, honest medical reason that you can't get vaccinated, whereas the Novak Djokovic situation was a little different to that. I don't think anyone really believes he has a medical condition which precludes him from being vaccinated. So that's a tricky one for the individual involved and the Hong Kong Racing Club to say that, well, if it is true that you have a medical condition which doctors say that you probably shouldn't get vaccinated, yet it's going to be hard to continue running a business as a leading trainer when you can't be there on race days.
No, exactly right. Hey, speaking of COVID, spread, Omicron, getting on with the life and all that sort of thing, it's a fascinating contrast between the let's get on with it attitude at the Magic Millions, where I think a lot of people understand that that was the attitude up there. But it was also declared a hotspot at the same time as you guys were up there. And there is going to be some sort of a ripple effect of people coming home with the virus and then whether people have to sit themselves out of work or what effect that may have. But that was a reality of the Gold Coast, where in southern Queensland there were 20,000 cases a day, sort of more of an open-minded attitude. But the situation in King Island is a complete contrast. They've got a terrific summer festival down there. They have six meetings from Boxing Day until mid-February, and there was four meetings remaining, but Taz Racing decided to pull the rug on the entire rest of the season, including the King Island Cup meeting in late January, and there was another three meetings as well because of the COVID risk. But there's only 115 cases on the island, and the reason used by Taz Racing was they feared that the visiting, you know, from the big island to the little island, from Tassie to King Island, so the stewards and officials and jockeys and trainers who came onto the island and then left and went back to their own racing industries, that the threat to the stewards and so on who were going there to the continuation of racing in Tasmania when they went home, if they'd fallen over with COVID, meant that they put a line through the entire King Island Racing Festival. And I had a chat to the president yesterday, and she also owned the local bakery as well. Down there, so she said it's just devastated the provision of food and beverage, and we had celebrity guests coming down, and at the same time as Taz Racing put a line through the King Island Festival, the state government said, hey everyone, let's get moving and let's get back to King Island. There's 400 golfers on there waiting to tee off today, but no one can go to the King Island races. So one thing that Taz Racing did also say was that the King Island Racing Club had expressed concern to it that the meeting shouldn't go ahead. And the president said, well, none of us expressed that concern, so they're not sure where that came from. So I guess what I'm saying is the contrast between different state governments and different jurisdictions, the free-for-all of the Gold Coast versus 100 positive tests on King Island, and that's wiped out the entire carnival.
How much of an impact will that have on... I mean, they're a picnic club who rely so heavily on their race days to fund them. So how much of an impact would it have overall?
Yeah, exactly. Wow. Well, the income to the island, to the, you know, the tourism attachment of the golfers who also want to go to the races and so on. So she said, yeah, there has been a devastating effect across the board on King Island. And just interesting that on day one, Taz Racing said, no, too much risk. And on the very next day, the state government said, no, everyone go to King Island and have a good time. So, yeah, just an interesting contrast. Like the very much a free-for-all elsewhere. And there was that little tiny niggle at the Gold Coast too, where it was like, gee, there might be some fallout from this, because it was an, you know, and obviously Jerry Harvey and Katie Page tested positive. And I, speaking to a lot of trainers, they fully expect this to play out in the next couple of weeks from people returning to their own states and basically coming back with COVID.
Yeah, well, it's to be expected, to be honest. And I know when we're up there, there are a number of trainers, a number of media people that contracted COVID while they were up there working. It's just the environment. You could not escape people when you're in a sales complex. So,
yeah.
But it's the decision that you had to make from a professional point of view as to people wanting to buy horses from bloodstock agents to syndicators to trainers, that they actually need to work and to take the risk. And it was a risk that people were willing to take. And thankfully for most people, not everyone, but for the high majority of people, really the Omicron, and you know, you can speak better than me, Matty, you're crook for a couple of days and then you bounce back pretty quickly.
The only problem with all of that is that the health system is still in crisis and overloaded. So as much as that is exactly right, and without you and I venturing too much into areas that we don't really know that much about, but I have been following it closely over the last week or so. Whilst there is that feeling of let's get on with it, and I totally understand it, the medical sector and the hospital healthcare sector would respond with, that's all very well for you to say, but you're not the one in here dealing with this crisis of numbers who are flooding the health system.
Let's hope that this wave, whatever you want to call it, as some reports are saying today, may have hit its peak, especially here in Victoria, and it will start to go down the other side. Hey, speaking of returns, what about Robbie Lang? How long is it until we get to see Robbie have his first runner back?
He will be, so there's a website that did a story on it. They've chosen the worst photo you could possibly have put of Robbie Lang, where he looks a bit like Ross McDonald, funny enough. But so Robbie, I guess it just goes to show that he's not the young man he used to be. And so he's got one horse in work, and it's called Tasuma, and it's been entered to run at one of two meetings later in the week. One of them's Pakenham Thursday, and the other one's Yarra Valley on Saturday. So it's baby steps for Robbie. Tasuma's the only horse on the books. He's Neil Bainbridge has allowed Robbie to start training some horses at Cranbourne, and hopefully Tasuma can get the ball rolling. He said it's been so long he even forgot his access code to log in to nominate the horse. So, yeah, so he might have Tasuma going around later in the week. Also, it's always interesting when, remember Tony Noonan did it, and one or two other trainers have picked away at the still lucrative but off-Broadway races at Dubai. And Will Clarkin's two horses, Parsifal and He's a Beltar, are already in transit to the Middle East to compete in lesser races over there, but still worth good money. And I know Tony Noonan got a good quid out of it a few years ago with some lesser-known horses. So hopefully that'll play out all right for him.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know you didn't get to hear it yesterday, but with last week, I should say, with Giles Thompson announcing he's stepping aside, we had a chat to John Massara, the boss of Racing Australia, as well as Coolmore last week, and we spoke to him, and he was quite open, honest and candid about his frustration with Racing Australia. And I wonder whether there is impending change there and what the landscape may look like moving forward in the next 12 months. Let's have a short listen to what John Massara had to say.
I felt at my age, with my history and background and experience, I might be able to make a difference there and get the parties together. I've not been able to date. No, it hasn't been easy. This has been 8 months now, daily attention to this issue. 8 months of daily attention to it. I've not made any headway. It's one of the toughest things I've had to do in the game. Well, I'm disappointed that I've not been able to get through to people about the importance of a national body and get a little bit of sort of give and take on both sides, you know. I can't go into that level of detail with you other than there have been issues which have obviously annoyed the jurisdictions, one and the other. And they need to square off on those, basically.
I wonder how much longer John Massara has in the job. By the sound of that, he's almost at the stage where he's like, I don't need this headache anymore.
Well, we were hearing 2 months ago, really, weren't we, that he's nearly queuing rack with the frustration of it. And he's very diplomatic still, even despite the frustration in pointing the finger. And it does coincide, of course. And I don't think the Giles Thompson announcement is the pointing the finger aspect, because I think the pointing the finger is almost overwhelmingly at Peter Volandis, and I say that without any bias. I just reading the play and reading the room over the last few months and talking to various people who are reasonably key players, and the main source of frustration is the absolute refusal of Peter Volandis to wander anywhere near a Racing Australia board table or to consider any sort of compromise on any issue. And I think that's the degree of frustration. Peter Volandis will say, as he has said to me, that there's more to it than that, without going into any detail. So, and obviously one of the key players in the, you know, the process of all this, of getting the parties together, is the current but departing CEO of Racing Victoria, Giles Thompson, who my understanding is that there was no reluctance from RV or Giles Thompson to meet Peter Volandis at the table. It was all at the other end, but there has been frustration over the whip-free racing experiment, which I don't understand why Racing New South Wales had an issue with it, but they did. But that was a Giles Thompson baby, and there's been some frustration from participants about decisions being made by Racing Victoria without liaison. You will remember well the Cindy Alderson, Mick Price, and I think there was one other. And you had them in the studio for an hour, and they were Dave Eustace, and they had a lot to say about their relationship with Racing Victoria, and I assume that means their relationship with Giles Thompson. So, you know, if there's a sort of a report sheet on Giles Thompson, I think the participants would say, and I've got to say, there was a lot of backlash when he announced his retirement. If you look at the messages and so on, I was a bit surprised at the vitriol expressed by, you know, participants and so on about Giles's tenure. And I think the main issue people had was inaccessibility, perhaps, of the upper echelon of Racing Victoria and the, you know, we don't see much of them. We don't get a lot of liaison. We get a lot of direction, but not a lot of collaboration. And that was certainly the view expressed by those trainers on that day. And I know that that interview that you had with them, I think Racing Victoria was a little bit upset with the trainers for a bit of a naive approach to the relationship with Racing Victoria. And I'm not judging it one way or the other, but that was certainly, it sort of came out a bit, and I was a bit surprised at just the level of frustration that the participants had with elements of dealing with Racing Victoria. And I'm sure you sort of made the same conclusion after that forum you had.
Yeah, absolutely. Matty, we'll talk more about that in the weeks to come. What's the best present you ever got your mum?
Ooh, it's a hard on the spotter, because I would love to answer it well. Being born. Mike Vallisaro says the best present I gave my mum was being born. My mum would have disagreed. Oh, no, can I put it on notice?
I'd say it's nothing major if you can't think of it.
Well, mum used to give us gimmick gifts. I remember she gave us blow-up coat hangers one year as a funny gift, and none of us thought it was funny at all. A pony. Well, we did get Blaze. Blaze. Mum bought us Blaze, the pony. So
no. What did you get your mum?
Oh, what I got my mum. I got a. Oh, every year I put a lot of thought into my mum's gifts. No, right. There's so many of them. What did you get your mum? A dodgy one or
no? It can't be as good as what Will Bourne got his mum. A share in the Magic Millions winner Coolangatta. So that's the segue. Have a listen to that interview after the break, Matty.
Pardon me, I had a sip of coffee as soon as you said that. I will, Michael.
Had,
I'll do that.
You only had
I was
30
mid-gulp.
Seconds to go.
I was mid-gulp. Righto, I'll listen to it.
RSN.net.au. Up after the break, we'll chat with Will's mum, Deb.